Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. 8:06 on this Friday. It's September 30th. 43 degrees here in Old Town Park. It looks like the rain clouds have moved on. On the phone with us now from the ABC Forecast Center, we have meteorologist Nate Larson. Good morning, Nate.
Right around Park City yesterday. Yeah, we've got, we only had a few hundredths of an inch, it looks like, of rain reported in Park City in the last 24 hours. So, not a whole lot out of the front that moved through. Temperatures are going to be quite a bit cooler today, though. Behind the front, northwest flow will be in place. Highs will be in the low 60. Should see mostly sunny skies take shape throughout the afternoon. Overnight lows back in the upper 30s, about 37 into Saturday. We do have mostly sunny skies expected again tomorrow afternoon. Southwest flow will increase on Sunday, and it will bring a little bit of moisture back into the mix. So there's going to be a slight chance of showers and thunderstorms Sunday afternoon. Temperatures will go from the low 60s tomorrow afternoon to about 66 on Sunday. So kind of a perfect autumn weekend up in Park City. Heading into next week, high pressure will build back in. Temperatures should maintain mid-60s for highs Monday, Tuesday, even into Wednesday and Thursday. We're expecting clear skies overnight with mostly sunny skies throughout each afternoon. Quiet weather after, again, just another slight chance of storms on Sunday afternoon. Otherwise, quiet in Park City into next week. Hope you guys have a safe weekend.
Okay. Leslie? Yeah, you too. Thank you. And on the phone with us now with our trails report, we have Laura Smith with Mountain Trails. Good morning, Laura.
Good morning, Leslie. Happy Friday, Park City. Well, you know, we've kind of checked around town. There's not a whole lot to report except for everybody's, the consensus is it's going to be an amazing weekend out on the trails. So we had a couple trail suggestions for you rather than, using the same old, same old. We think that maybe Lost Prospector Loop would be a great one. So if you start up the rail trail and you head toward town, maybe you parked out at Richardson Flat or Quinn's Junction, and then you headed out toward Freemason, take a left up Freemason and go around the April Mountain and Gamble Oak area. Then another option might be Snowtop. You can park at the the Snow Park parking lot. Head up Snowtop. It's kind of behind the funicular building. That's a great place where you can go and get some wonderful views of the Dordogne. And then another great place to go leaf peeping if you're a mountain biker might be out to the Slate Creek trails in the Uintas. So you go up Bear Lake Highway, and just before where there used to be the old pay station there, on the other side at Slate Creek, you can park. South Summit Trails Foundation is asking that we mountain bikers please don't park near the horse corrals, but rather park in the parking lot. And then that's a 5-mile loop, and it is really spectacular. It's flowy and fun. There's a gentle climb up, and then the downhill portion's just bomber fun. So the trails will be nice and tacky with the amount of moisture we've gotten lately. So great place to get out there. If you want to get more information on, getting off the main routes, like, Bonanza Flat's going to be probably a very popular destination this weekend with folks driving up and down Big Cottonwood. So maybe staying away from the Bonanza Flat area. Also Armstrong and, the loops that we all think of automatically will likely be, impacted with those who want to get out and see the beauty of our mountain town this weekend. So we would recommend that you go to mountaintrails.org, get on our interactive map, and you can create a route. It'll tell you what the vertical is. It'll tell you the level of all of the trails that you've chosen. It's actually it's a fun tool. And you can also go to Mountain Trails website and get yourself a copy of the Prime Cuts guidebook that has hiking and mountain biking, complete guide to, different routes throughout the Park City area. So, we hope you have a great weekend. Be safe out there. It's going to be gorgeous. And remember, just smile and say hi as you're passing.
Okay, Laura, have a great weekend. Thank you. And coming up in just a few minutes, we'll be checking in with Swanner Preserve and Eco Center Exhibits Manager Hunter Klingensmith with details about their that exhibit that's opening today. Park City Council member Max Dorley will be in to recap Tuesday's joint meeting with the Summit County Council. And finally, Park City Ski and Snowboard Executive Director Christy Hind and new Youth Sports Division Coach Ryan Devine with details about the new division, which is now open for registration. Planned Parenthood of Utah is hosting a postcard writing party in anticipation of the midterm elections in November. KPCW's Andrew Buchanan has the details.
Election season is around the corner, and organizations like Planned Parenthood are mobilizing to support candidates committed to reproductive health care. They are calling those efforts Rovember. One of the events Planned Parenthood has scheduled for Rovember is a postcard writing party this weekend on Main Street. Annabelle Scheinberg is the Vice President of Outreach for Planned Parenthood of Utah. She said the event's goal is to fill out postcards that will be sent to 15,000 female voters between 18 and 40 years old in northern Utah.
To let them know that it's essential to get out and vote and support candidates who support families, pro-family policies, including child care, paid family leave, pay equity, and all the things that support families. And, you know, on the front of the postcard, we had a local Utah artist design it, and it's got some really great stamps with pictures of women, and one of them is a uterus, and it just says vote. Because this year, you know, our rights are on the ballot.
Scheinberg said that the overturning of Roe v. Wade in June was a seismic shift in health care. And with that shift, the vernacular is changing around the language of pro-choice versus pro-life.
What we found is, first off, I think most people would identify themselves as pro-life in some way, but more important, so it's not a great dichotomy on the language. More importantly, decisions are something that we make and we think about. Choice may be more temporal, like, I think I'd like this in my coffee this morning. When we know this is a decision that people think hard about, and for some people it's a difficult decision.
Scheinberg said Planned Parenthood wants to honor the decision to have an abortion with more accurate language like reproductive freedom.
The whole movement for reproductive freedom takes into account more issues such as a person's economic status and how all of these things in a person's life come together, right? For example, their access to health care, their experience of discrimination in, say, housing or school or things that may have contributed to where they are economically.
Utah's trigger law, which would ban all abortions except for in cases of rape, incest, and to save the life of the mother, briefly went into effect when Roe was overturned. Planned Parenthood filed an injunction challenging that law in June as soon as the U.S. Supreme Court overturned Roe v. Wade. Scheinberg said the legal argument was crafted from the belief that the Utah Constitution now affords more people reproductive freedom than the United States Constitution. She said Planned Parenthood's lawyers highlighted that to the judge when it sought the injunction.
We really talked a lot about pregnancy and the health condition. We talked about due process. We talked about privacy. We talked about many things that we feel people are entitled to by the Constitution or given the right to, and yet are, that is not honored with this trigger ban.
The injunction was granted, meaning that the trigger law is not in effect in Utah. Even though some people don't realize it, abortion is legal in Utah up to 18 weeks of pregnancy. The law remains on hold through the appeals process and the next court date, which Scheinberg said will be in September of 2023. Earlier this month, two lawmakers, Representative Kara Berkland, whose district includes most of unincorporated Summit County, and Representative Carrie Ann Lisenby of Davis County sent cease and desist letters to Planned Parenthood and other abortion providers. Scheinberg called the letters cruel and threatening and said Planned Parenthood considered them a publicity stunt.
As I stated, we have a preliminary injunction, and throughout the history of the legal system, that protects us from the implications of this law. So we are acting fully in line with how law has been practiced for a long time, and the arguments put forward in the cease and desist letter were fairly radical in terms of how anyone would be treated in the situation we're in.
The Rovember event takes place Sunday, October 2nd at Jago Gallery at 268 Main Street from 3 to 5 p.m. For more information, visit engagement@ppau.org. Andrea Buchanan, KPCW News.
Well, just in time for Halloween, the Swanna Preserve and Eco Center opening its new exhibit tonight for members, but tomorrow to the general public. In the studio with details, I have exhibits manager Hunter Klingensmith. Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie.
So the exhibit is all about bats, and I guess we should start by saying that bats sometimes get a bad rap.
They do. Bats sometimes get a bad rap, and that's why we were really excited to bring in this exhibit, because bats, people often think that bats just carry rabies and are scary and that they'll bite you. But in reality, they're actually pretty safe and incredibly important to not only our ecosystem, but our economy and culture. And so this exhibit highlights all of those things. And we're really excited to show that off.
So what are people going to find at the exhibit?
Yeah, so there are hands-on interactives. There's also some cultural artifacts and images and symbols that show how humans have interacted with bats throughout time. And then there are some live bats in the exhibit as well. We have Egyptian fruit bats. I got to feed them last night, and it was pretty exciting to see them. So it's a great opportunity to get to see bats up close, and they're actually super cute, so definitely worth coming to check them out and learning a little bit about what they eat and how they survive.
Yeah. So how do they live in?
So they have an enclosure mm-hmm. in the eco center, and they have there's some enrichment for them in there, things for them to smell and move around. They have enough room to fly, and they spend most of their time hanging upside down, honestly. Last night I was there a little bit into the evening, just getting ready for our opening, and they're most active at night, right? They're nocturnal. And so they were crawling around, they're eating a lot of fruit, so we're putting about 16 ounces worth of fruit into their enclosure every night for them to eat. And they are just hanging out. So they've got like a wire mesh at the top, and that's what they're hanging on. And then there's a series of ropes and other greenery and things for them to be on in the enclosure.
Okay, so do they eat at night then?
They eat at night. Mm-hmm. Yep, they're most active at night. And the bats that we have are fruit bats. Most of the bats that we have here in Utah or that are native to Utah actually eat insects. And so that's one really important ecological impact of bats, is that they eat a huge amount of insects, most insects that we don't want around, especially for the agriculture industry. So bats contribute about between 3.7 up to $53 billion dollars worth of pest control. And it's non-toxic, all natural, especially for our agriculture industry. So bats are really important in that way. But the bats that we have eat fruit. And then there are bats out there as well that are pollinators, that eat nectar from flowers. So bats have lots of fun impacts on our environment.
Yeah, but the fruit bats, though, I mean, I guess those are ones that are cherry and apple orchard folks don't want around.
Yeah, maybe not quite so much in those places, but luckily we don't see those fruit bats here. We don't think we have any fruit bats native to Utah.
Okay. And in terms of, you know, in what we call a fruit bat, I mean, there's also like the vampire bat, right?
Yeah.
I mean, why is that?
So there's only a few, I think there's only three species of, it's in the exhibit, so I should know it, but I think there's only three species of bats that actually drink blood. None of them live here in the United States. And most of them are eating smaller animals. They're not really going for humans. So they have this misconception that bats, all bats drink blood, but it's only a very, very, very small percentage of the bat population that actually do that. And usually they're going for pretty small other mammals.
Yeah. I have heard of some people who have bats, and is it nesting? I don't know if that's the right word. You know, like in the eaves of their home, which it's a nuisance just because of the guano, right?
Yeah.
So how is it that, if somebody doesn't want bats at their house, I mean, how do you prevent it? Just keep a light on? Would they stay away?
I don't think that the lights stay away. I don't have a ton of information about bat prevention, but Utah State University, which we're part of, does have some great information on their website about how to kind of keep bats out of your house. One thing that you can do is provide a bat house on your home or near your home. That provides another nesting habitat, but keeps them out of your attic and out of your house. And then making sure that before you seal, so having a pretty well-sealed attic is one great way that I know you can do it. But always making sure that there aren't any bats inside of your house before you do that is a good thing.
Oh, yeah. All right, so you've got a sneak peek for members happening tonight, 4 to 7. For yep. members, it's a free exhibit? Or?
Yep, it's free this evening. And then the exhibit to the public, once it's open, does have a separate entrance fee. It's $8 for adults, $5 for kids 3 to 12 years old, and then 13 and up as adult. And then 2 and under are free. But tonight's member opening is kind of a special sneak peek. So if you'd like to come to that and you're not already a member of the preserve, you can join online. You can join today and still come to the party. There's a registration link to register for the party as well, just so we know how many people are coming. We'll have drinks for adults. We will check IDs at the door. And then we have some cookies and some fun other snacks. And we will have some crafts and other activities. And then the exhibit's creator will also be there tonight. So if you're interested in coming to that, become a member. And then we'll also have some free days for the exhibit. Mm-hmm. So once the exhibit is open to the public, Friday, October 14th, Saturday, November 12th, and Sunday, December 11th will all be free days in the exhibit. And then we also have sponsored free tickets to the exhibit. So if anyone is... I know that sometimes having an entrance fee can be a barrier to entry, and we want to make sure that this exhibit is accessible to everyone. So if a fee isn't a barrier to entry for anyone, they can reach out to us. We have some free tickets available.
Okay. So it's on exhibit till when?
Until January 8th.
Okay. And it sounds like you also got another promotion. If somebody wears a Halloween costume a couple of days before Halloween, you're going to get a discount.
Yeah, the weekend before Halloween. If you come in costume, we'll give you $2 off of your ticket entry into the exhibit. We do just want to make sure that people remember that it is a family-friendly exhibit, so wearing costumes that are family-friendly is always a good thing.
Okay. So this is a traveling exhibit, and it's just making it stop here then?
Yeah, it's a traveling exhibit. It's from a company called Build for Impact. And we've actually had another one of their exhibits in the past, so our Art and Science of Arachnids exhibit was from them as well. And so it... Prior to this was at Exploration Works in Montana, which is where it debuted. Yeah. So this will be the second location for the exhibit.
And what's the bat population at the preserve? You have any idea?
I don't know what the bat population at the preserve is. I know that we do see them. One bat that we have seen on the preserve is silver-haired bats. And they're a pretty small little guy, and they actually like to hang out on the trunks of trees. So we know that a lot of bats will roost in caves or hollowed-out areas, but some bats do actually roost out in the open or hanging from trees, and the silver-haired bat is one of those.
Okay. All right, let's see, you've got a couple of other upcoming events. Maybe we'll mention while you're here, you've got a wreath-making event happening October 2nd. What's that about?
Yeah, so we're partnering with Park City Gardens, and we'll be doing a fall wreath-making workshop. So what we'll do is we'll go out onto the preserve first. We will collect some natural materials to use for that wreath-making. They'll also bring some other supplies for us to use. And then Park City Gardens will lead us through the process of making the workshop, or making the wreath and how to do that. We wanted to promote using natural materials to help decorate your home.
Yeah, so do those like willow branches?
Yeah,
those
willow really branches. Well? We have some woods rose that will probably be a nice thing to add in. I think they'll bring the wreaths already, the base of the wreath prepared, and then we'll build onto it.
Okay, and then you have a November 3rd butterfly pinning.
Yeah, so the Kimball Art Center is hosting the Eat Me, Drink Me exhibition in their space. And that exhibit features a variety of pinned insects as part of the artwork. And it highlights, I believe that it highlights the connections between those insects and their environment and the patterns that are in nature, how that works. And so Thanksgiving Point has a great person who actually teaches butterfly pinning, and we thought that it would be a fun way to integrate art and nature together. We'll learn a little bit about patterns in nature and the butterflies that we see on the preserve, and then we'll also get to pin them and create some artwork with them.
Yeah, we just heard about the exhibit at the Kimball where there's like a wall of insects, dead insects, I suppose.
Yeah.
So where do the butterflies come from, though?
The butterflies will come from the insectarium at Thanksgiving Point.
Ah, okay. And then finally, the November 12th walk on Antelope Island.
Yeah, so as we have been hearing lots about, the Great Salt Lake is shrinking in size and is threatened. And so we're going to take a walk out there with some experts on the Great Salt Lake. And we will actually walk out to the lake while we talk about the state of the Great Salt Lake and what we can do to improve its quality.
Okay, so these are open to everybody, or just a discount for members? Is that
discount how it works? For members? Mm-hmm. They're open to the public. You do need to register for these events in advance because they have certain supply amounts and quantities of people that we can fit. But you can just go to our website to register.
Okay, and that's
SwanarEcoCenter.org.
Okay, Hunter, anything else?
I think that's it. Thanks, Leslie.
Thank you. Hunter Klingsmith, again, is the Exhibits Manager with the Swanner Preserve and Eco Center. Well, the Park City Council met in a special joint session with the Summit County Council on Tuesday. In the studio with his take on some of the issues discussed, I have Park City Council member Max Doyle. Good morning, Max.
Good morning, Leslie.
So how often are these joint sessions getting scheduled? Quarterly, is that what you're doing, or...?
It kind of feels that way right now. We've had three of them this year. We did not schedule another one yet, just because we have some new members of the Summit County Council coming into office here in the next few months, and we wanted to give them a chance to weigh in on timing and potential conversation points.
Yeah. So, how do you find these joint sessions helpful?
I think the community. They spoke pretty clearly that they want to see us work a little bit more regionally. And so we're just giving that an effort here. We need to be on the same page on certain issues. And I think it's good. We're developing relationships and we're working together and we're hearing each other's problems. And I think it's a good effort.
Yeah. So who sets the agenda?
That's a good question. I think that our staffs work together to set the agenda. I believe the mayor and the chair of their council work together to set the agenda. They've been sort of light in terms of the bullet point items, but they're robust topics that we need to work on together. So that's been kind of the driver of the agendas.
All right.
To date.
On Tuesday, you've got about a 90-minute presentation, I think, from the Park City Chambers on their sustainable tourism plan. How do you think this is going to make a difference going forward, or will it?
Well, I think we will see in time what kind of a difference it makes. Look, the Chamber Bureau has historically been essentially a marketing organization for Park City, trying to get heads in bed, so to speak. And we've heard from our community over the last few years, as you well know, that we feel like the people are here. We're getting them in spades. We have big marketing organizations from Vail and Deer Valley. They're bringing in a lot of customers. And I think our community said, look, we would like the Chamber Bureau to focus its attention on the quality of life here. The Chamber Bureau came back and said that they're more than willing to go through that practice. They got a wonderful group of stakeholders together to have this conversation, a really robust conversation. And I think the refocus is a good one for the community. What type of impact it will have, I'm not sure. There are Chamber Bureaus across the country that are making this shift. It's important that we still highlight what Park City is, and we want to bring that visitor economy to town, but we also need to start balancing that with the quality of life for those of us who live here. And we've asked the Chamber to participate in that, and they have answered that call, and they've developed a plan. During this meeting, there was a lot of there were a lot of questions about, where are the teeth in the plan? What are the deliverables? And I think that's a tough thing to say at the outset, right? We need, that's a valid question, but I think it's really important that we understand almost everything starts with a plan, and then you get into the execution. I think the objectives in this plan show that they're focused on community. They're focused on educating our visitors and our community on how important that tourist-based economy is, but also you know, educating our visitors on this is kind of how we do things in Park City. Could you please have some respect for our community when you come here? And I think everybody will have a better experience that way.
Yeah. So, I mean, in a year, then do we come back and say, okay, what happened? I mean, is there a difference? You know, do we, I don't know, do you bring residents into it and say, is this what you expected with a sustainable tourism plan?
Yeah, look, I think over the last year we've had a lot of conversation of what is sustainable tourism, right? I mean, it's hard. We've been trying to basically define this. And I think throughout the West, we're trying to define what this means. To answer your question, we will definitely be coming back, having conversations with the chamber and the county about what are the impacts of the messaging? What are the impacts of our education campaigns over the first winter? Can we expect robust behavioral change in the first year? I think that that's hard to expect a huge shift, but over time, I think this kind of messaging could have a real positive impact on the community.
All right. Did either of the councils have suggestions about what they want to see from it? Or,
you know, it would be hard to define a very specific ask. I think there were some asks for metrics. How are you going to measure the change in behavior? How are you going to, you know, define what type of change the community likes or dislikes? I don't know that we can actually give firm answers on that right out of the gate. Again, we've had conversations about plans like, you know, like our walkability plans or our transportation plans. All of these things have different pieces to them that, you know, you got to start with a plan so that you can go out there and start executing. And basically, I think I would ask the community to be patient over a relatively long period of time, you know, 1, 2, 3 years to allow these things to take root. And hopefully that will show some positive change.
Okay. There seems to be no consensus over what to do in Quinns Junction regarding park and rides. We heard from Summit County Council Member Doug Clyde yesterday saying that building that UDOT paid park and ride still isn't a good idea, even if changes to the intersection are made. I think you were in support of this. Do you still think it's a good idea?
You know, I think what we heard in our meeting was that we can't find consensus, which makes it really difficult on staff from both the county and the city to go to work on short-term solutions. If you don't have consensus from these two groups on how we're going to accomplish a short-term solution, you know, they're just going to continue to get bounced left and right, and that's not fair to do to them. What they did here, and what we do have consensus on, is that long-term, we need some big solutions for where to catch cars on their way into Summit County and into Park City. We all agree that that is something that staff can start working on, both at the county level and the city level. In terms of our differences of opinion, you know, there were 10 of us at the table, and I think there were probably 5 different versions of how to deal with our short-term problem. And a lot of it came down to trying to predict what paid reserve parking is going to do. What type of impacts those are going to have. We can debate left and right all day whether Quinns Junction is a good solution and the failure of the intersection is too big of a problem. Some people land there. Some of us land a little bit more on the side of Richardson Flats doesn't really give us isn't a good beta for whether a park and ride works because there are many fatal flaws in there as indicated by, you know, the experts that came in and talked to us. But there are fatal flaws in almost all of our short-term plans, and therefore we have to get consensus on what type of chance we're willing to take. And so I'm not exactly sure what's going to happen. We do know we have paid reserve parking this year. We do know we have more enforcement on parking in town on public streets. And we are ready to make changes in the moment to different reactions to those things.
Yeah. What about that Richardson Flat park and ride? I mean, you said Tuesday that you don't think people will use it twice because of the first experience being so poor.
Yeah, look, I want to try and make sure to be careful about my personal opinion versus the opinion of the entire body, right? Mm-hmm. we are trying to work together, and we don't agree on our opinion of what is or what isn't right. I personally don't want to park at Richardson Flats, and I feel like if I were going on a ski vacation, I probably wouldn't want to go back and have that experience twice. I've done, you know, a little on the ground research with my employees at the corner store, and frankly, if I force them to park out there, they will be looking for other jobs. They are not interested. Those are anecdotal examples. That's a personal opinion. That is not the opinion of the majority of the people who are elected in the region right now. So I'm not sure exactly how that's going to play out, but I am not confident that Richardson Flats is a good solution.
So what are the viable short-term solutions for your staff?
Again, I think Quinn's Junction would have been a pretty good solution. But that's my personal opinion, and I know that intersection could fail. I feel like that's the best solution on the table. And I didn't get there just, you know, willy-nilly. I looked at the experts that came in and told us that out of the solutions that were presented to them from UDOT to our city engineers, that was the solution that rose to the top. So I follow the lead of the experts, generally.
So what is the status of the Quinn's Park and Ride? I mean, is it just, it's water under the bridge at this point?
I don't know if it's water under the bridge because it hasn't come to council to get that definitive answer yet. But it feels like it would be hard for us to give staff to do any more work on Quinn's Junction without more consensus, both regionally and within our council. So, yeah.
But again, when we think about this winter, Richardson Flat is the short-term solution, at least for this season.
That's true, and it's coming to us. Our winter transportation plan is on the agenda this week, next week, right? So October 6th. We have three options there. One is essentially do nothing. Another is add a couple routes to Park City Heights and increase service around town. And then the third one is to, you know, prop up Richardson Flats and run buses out there on a 15-minute loop and really give people the option to park out there. And we'll just see where our council lands on that. I want to have these conversations this week, and I'm not firmly in one camp or another at the moment, because I do agree with you that giving people some option is really important. And my main fear is if we give them a bad option, is that a bad experience? And then do people shy away from park and rides as a solution on the whole? And I would not think that this would be a good case study for that.
Yeah. So what is the bigger long-term solution? It sounds like you are eager to start on something like that. I mean, are we looking at that corridor property as a signalized park and ride opportunity?
Absolutely. I think we are, right? Mm-hmm. I think that we are talking about trying to gather a regional group that includes our partners at Vail, our Park City Mountain, our partners at Deer Valley, HPCA, the Summit County, and a whole slew of partners in the region, and come up with some solutions and really do this in a timely manner, right? Give them a hard date to say, here's what we need. We need solutions that are actionable. We need them both from the west side and the east side of the community. And we need answers on this so that we can give clear direction to staffs on both sides. And we need to start addressing this problem, because our community has said traffic is their primary problem in the winter, and we need to start fixing it.
I got a postcard in the mail yesterday on the proposed parking plan throughout town, basically no parking in the Three Kings, Thanes Canyon, Payday area. Prospector was wide open in terms of parking. And basically what you're looking for then is comments. You know, I mean, if people get this postcard and say, well, I think that there should be enforcement in my parking lot, at what point do things change? Sounds like everything's still up in the air.
Yeah. Again, things are kind of up in the air, but I want to reiterate that our staff and everybody at the city are ready to react to situations as they happen this winter. We know that we're not able to predict exactly how humans will behave when they're charged to do things that they used to do for free. So we're trying to use our crystal ball the best we can. What we want to hear from the community is, you know, how do you feel about what we have laid out here out of the gate? We are trying to protect those communities that have historically seen that overflow parking. And that's the primary piece. That's the only piece that we can really act on right out of the gate. Now, you and I both live over in Prospector, and I found that to be a little bit concerning too because of the number of bus routes that go through Prospector. We're trying to come up with all types of creative ways to limit cut-through traffic and limit parking on residential streets so that people who live here, you know, can continue to live their lives the way they want. But we will actually be having to react in the moment a little bit this winter.
Yeah, so what about people living in Thanes, right? I mean, that's a couple of my friends there. That's who I would carpool with. So where, if I'm going to drive to their house, where am I going to park? Right?
In their driveway.
All right.
I mean, that's generally where parking was planned for Thanes. Parking on the street in Thanes was never really contemplated as a solution other than, you know, the random party, but it's not meant for day parking on the street in Thanes Canyon.
Let's see, the light deed discussion, the light deed program that Park City is looking into. I mean, is this just a discussion on Tuesday? I mean, or is it something Summit County Council is interested in and wanted some feedback on, or?
No, we just wanted to make sure that we invited Summit County Council to participate in the group that helps decide on, you know, the validity of a particular application. Just for the sake, you never know if Summit County might want to enact something similar. It's working really well in Vail. We have $1 million set aside to try this program out and see kind of who steps up to the plate and how much money they receive, and really this is a pilot program trying to use existing housing stock in town to meet the needs that the community's short on.
So the program is in place?
Yeah, we have a pilot program mm-hmm. approved. We have money set aside, and we're ready to get started. We just want to make sure we have all the people who might have some insight at the table when we're making decisions on applications and kind of how this program goes.
Okay, where is that application? Is it online? Is that
Yeah, you can get it on our website. Okay. You know, you can go to the Park City website. Almost everything's there. Sometimes you gotta look through it a little bit to find it. But we've been working over the last year, 2 years, to make sure that website's easy to navigate.
Okay. Anything else you want to highlight?
No, I'm excited for the trails this weekend, Laura. Gave some good suggestions. Maybe don't go to the hot spots. Go to some of your secret haunts and enjoy the trails and the leaves. I'm looking forward to it.
Okay, Max, thanks for coming in.
Yeah, thanks so much, Leslie.
It's Park City Council Member Max Dorney. Park City Ski and Snowboard offering a new youth sports division. And in the studio to tell us about it, I have the Executive Director of Park City Ski and Snowboard, Christy Hine, along with the Head Coach, Ryan Devine. Good morning to both of you.
Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie.
Let's see. I get you on the right mic there, Christy. Maybe you can just start by telling us why the need for a new youth division.
So we've been taking a hard look sort of globally at what's the best way to get kids involved in sport. And one of the things that we've realized is, you know, as a pipeline, we need to be able to introduce kids across disciplines. So we started a couple of years ago with our signature Shredders program, which exposes kids across our disciplines to alpine. They do a couple of weeks of alpine, of cross country and Nordic, freestyle, free ski. There's a snowboard add-on. And the program was wildly successful. So these are not for never-evers, but for kids who are in that 7 to 9-year-old range, who, you know, want to be multi-sport athletes, want to learn more about sport before committing to one thing. So we've sort of grown that, and Ryan was promoted this year to direct that whole division. And we've got lots of exciting offerings that are coming on board. Registration just opened a couple of days ago.
Okay.
Last Thursday.
Okay. Before we kind of get to the details there, is this in response to like Park City Mountain Resort? I mean, their farm team, which has traditionally been your alpine feeder system.
Yep.
It's always full.
It's always full, and we've had a really good working relationship with Vail, with Park City Mountain, and Mike Sussman and his programs. We have a placement day, and 30 kiddos come into the Devo Alpine program, which Dar Hendrickson has run for so many years. But there are a lot of kiddos who are pretty good skiers in that 7 to 9 year old range, who, you know, like you said, those programs fill up. So we're going to run some of those programs over at the UOP, which, as you know, has got its own sort of athlete-only resort training.
Yeah, and I was going to say, I mean, I think part of the problem with the resort is finding staff. If they have a hard time finding staff, how are you finding staff?
Well, staff recruitment is something that we start working on in the springtime. We're trying to be a really good employer. We've raised our minimum wage, as Vail has, to $20 an hour, with the exception of some of our high school junior coaches. So, and you know, we're trying to make it a really good place to work. And, you know, it's very difficult to live here, but we are pulling from Salt Lake, from the universities and colleges, from Heber Valley, from Camas, and I think we've got a pretty good crew. We're always looking for good support. So if you do, you know, if you are listening and you're somebody who has a good, strong background in winter sport and you're interested in coaching, I think Ryan Devine would be happy to hear from you.
Okay, well, Ryan, tell us a little bit about yourself and your background.
I grew up as a competitive mogul skier out of Idaho. Did that all through high school and moved to Salt Lake City to attend the University of Utah back in 2008. Started coaching at the Olympic Park in the summer at the water ramps, and kind of kept doing that because it was a fun job. Coached summers and winters for one of the various clubs before we all merged. Kept doing that, and then loved it so much, stuck around and just slowly worked my way up, and now I'm here.
Yeah. So tell us a little bit about this, the new division. So we've got, it's a lot more than Alpine then. It's Alpine, moguls, Nordic again.
It is. Yeah. So, it's pretty much everything, that we offer. So, we have our Shredders program, which is our full multi-sport, program. We're bringing back Skills and Drills, which is, you know, a predominantly Alpine focused. We have Bumps and Jumps, which is moguls and park and pipe focused. We have our Little Rippers program, which is snowboard, which is taking place at Woodward. And then we have our Learn to Fly program, which is Nordic jumping.
Okay, so you're overseeing all of those programs then?
Correct, huh? Yes. And we set it up so young athletes can mix and match, and it's super easy for them to try multiple disciplines, so they're not kind of putting, you know, one silo at a young age and get a chance to experience multiple disciplines within our organization.
All right. So how does that work then? When they register, they don't just register for bumps and jumps for the winter. They can do some bumps and jumps and skills and drills?
Correct. Yeah. So most of them take place on different days. So they have an opportunity to try every discipline if they want. And if they can't work that into their schedule, that's where the Shredders program comes into play, because it's 3 weeks of Alpine, 3 weeks of Nordic jumping, 3 weeks of cross country, and then 3 weeks of freestyle free ride.
Okay. So this is specifically then for 7 to 9 year olds?
Correct. Mm-hmm. But if there is a 10-year-old, we're not going to turn them away if they fit in skill-wise. So it's more of an age recommendation.
Okay. And is that how it is? It's just they meet, what, once a week, twice a week for each of the different programs, or...?
It depends. Each program only runs 2 days a week at max, but they can sign up for multiple, so they could come 3 days a week if they wanted.
Okay, got it. All of that's up online now?
Correct, yeah. If you head to our website, parkcityss.org, you can check it out under Youth Development.
And really, one of the things we're trying to do here is make programs super accessible and flexible for families. The Shredders program in particular is our signature DEI program. So we are really trying to get as many kids in the Latino community involved in our programming. There are scholarships available. When you register, they're automatically, you can see where it is that you can get a scholarship that's made available by the UOLF very generously. So we really encourage families whose kiddos have been exposed to the sport. They are skiers. We're not teaching kids to ski or ride. But if they've had some exposure through Get Out and Play or something like that, and they're interested in a team environment and multi-sport, please check out parkcityss.org, Youth Development, and you'll automatically be keyed to see where there are scholarships available.
Okay. We were talking earlier with Max, just the we've got, of course, for the first time, reservation paid parking at the resort. How is that impacting your staff?
Well, we're working really hard. We're going to be working with Park City Mountain on a plan to bring our employees. We have up to 80 coaches who show up on the mountain on Saturdays and Sundays. So that's going to be a very, you know, we will be impacted, but we're trying to think creatively whether we'll leverage our own fleet and have meeting places in town to bring coaches in. But we'll be working with, and we're meeting with Park City Mountain in real time on that. So it's going to be a joint effort to make sure that we get, like, they get their employees. We'll be having to get employees there. And then we're going to be encouraging our members to carpool. You know, carpool, you do have to make a reservation, but it's not paid if you've got four or more in your car. We think it's the right thing to do. I mean, look, we understand the impacts on this town of everybody coming in to ski and enjoy this beautiful, you know, these beautiful mountain resorts. And so we're going to do everything we can to work with the city and with Park City Mountain Resort to make sure that we're, you know, good citizens and figure out this parking situation.
Yeah. And I know it's been a challenge in the past, right? Not athletes not being able to get to their programs on time, coaches not being able to get. Yeah. So it is, it's been a challenge the way it's been. So.
You know, and it's one of the reasons we're so grateful to Colin Hilton and his team for conceiving of the UOP, because there's plenty of parking up there. What we don't have at UOP is, you know, lots of terrain and big mountain terrain for some of our younger athletes to ski on. But the parking is good, and it's easy to get up there, and it's going to be expanded, as you've probably been watching, to have another peak that'll be open this December. So, you know, I mean, it's been a long-term plan. Lots of really smart people have been thinking about, you know, how the resort's going to fit the needs of athletes and how we're going to make, you know, some additional terrain available. And it's been working out over at UOP. Yes. And we've opened Deer Valley, opened its arms to us on the Alpine side of our programs, our higher level athletes last year. We're going to do that again this year. Thank you so much, Deer Valley. So we're now at three world-class venues, and our older kids are also working out at the Center of Excellence, thanks to the U.S. Ski Team. So I think our product's improving, and we're also trying to keep our tuition down and to keep our athletes, you know, keep these programs accessible at the entry level in particular.
Yeah. So that second phase of the Utah Olympic Park, you say it you've got the chairlifts underway, it sounds like. Or the chairlift, I should say. You were flying poles last week.
Yeah, exactly. On Sunday, I don't know who in town saw the helicopters. I went up to see it because it was absolutely spectacular what those Black Hawk helicopters can carry. But they are, it's just fast and furious. It's unbelievable. So we do have, the towers are in. The mechanicals should be done, I think, you know, I think they're talking about the first week in November. And, you know, those guys are pushing hard and they're getting it done. Electrical's hard, I think, is probably the hardest part because of the supply chain, you know, just the COVID supply chain. But talk about relentless pursuit of excellence. Really, Colin and his team have, and Jamie Kimball in particular, Colin, Callum Clark, you know, they've really got it going. So I see every day, every single day, new improvements up there, and we're really excited.
So snowmaking lines were buried as well then, huh?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Snowmaking lines in the pond. They're going to have a snowmaking pond coming online here pretty soon. It was a pretty wet summer, so that kind of made it more difficult to dig that pond. But my understanding is things are happening even this week on that.
Okay. What else you got going on this time of year?
So 50th anniversary of the ski swap. And that's going to be happening at Basin Recreation Fieldhouse, as it always, you know, it has for many, many years. The dates on that are November 4 through 6, so starting Friday. We will do what we did last year, which is timed reservations. So folks can start to buy tickets, $15 on Friday night, $10 on Saturday, and I think $5 on Sunday. And that's parkcityskiswap.com. You can go on and do your reservations. If you've got a garage full of gear that you're looking to repurpose or sell at our swap, you can start to drop that off either at Jan's or at Cole Sport, just as we've always done. And I think that starts on October 31st. So check out the website. But we are really excited. Swap is on 50 years, Leslie, if you can believe that. A big community event. 5,000 people come to town and go through and get gear for their family and friends. And we hope to see everybody come out.
Okay. Anything else you wanted to mention, Ryan?
No, I think Christy touched on most of it. So,
okay. Yeah. All right, Ryan.
I guess check out our website for our new youth development programs, and yeah.
It's going to be an awesome season, Leslie.
Okay, thanks, guys.
Thanks so much.
Thank you.